I can kind of see why people like it, but the second you show me a gaming chair, like, I want to throw up. It's like horrible.
Hi, y'all, and welcome to Muko's Corner. Muko's Corner is a show about leading a life that feels more you in your life and tech career. I'm your host, Mayuko, and I invite you to come on, sit down, get a tea or something like that maybe today, get cozy, and enjoy the show. Today's guest, we have Tom from the channel Byte Review. Tom is a YouTuber making really aesthetic videos about gadgets, gear, and desk setup videos on YouTube. With a background in teaching, he also works as a photographer and videographer on a freelance basis and is based in the UK, if you can't tell from his accent already. So, hi Tom, how you doing? How's your week been?
Hello. Yeah, very good, thank you. I'm trying to think of all the exciting things I've done. You know, it's funny you say accent because, like, I think it must be an English thing, but I don't feel like I have an accent. And then when everyone's like, oh, your accent's so English, I'm like, is it? This is just how people, this is just so, like, normal to me. Yeah, well, right. I don't know. It's
subjective.
Funny.
You, like, I mean, to you, I have an accent, right? Like, I have the American, probably American. Californian accent. Yeah.
But yours is cool. Mine's so dull. Mine's just so basic.
No, I think yours is cool. I mean, I think it's probably grass on the ground accent. But I always thought British accents sound super cool.
I'll do my best to speak the Queen's today, then.
I also like the local accents too. I watch fair amount of like British television, and then they always say like, oh, this is like a very like Scouse accent, this is a very like South London accent, and I'm just like, I don't know what any of that means, but I'm gonna learn, I guess, because they're so different.
There's so many as well, and some of them honestly are horrid, like they're really horrid. It's like, oh, but some of them are really lovely. There's a fair few. It's funny because where I'm from down in the southwest, there isn't an accent. If there's a standard English accent, I guess that's the one I have. There's no like twang to it or anything, because they often think we're from like farmer country because that's where all the farms are down here. So everyone's a bit like ooh-ah and all that sort of stuff when you talk about farms. And but yeah, it's what it
do
is.
Do you have any words that you use in your area but not others that are like local vocabulary?
Probably the only one that springs to mind would be like saying matey instead of like, so if you don't know who you're talking about, it's like, oh, matey up the road said this, or oh, matey at the shop said that. That's
interesting.
A southwest sort of thing. Or saying
versus like, what do you usually say? Like, or not usually, but like, what are people in other parts of the UK?
I guess
say?
You'd just say that person or whoever it was here or something. But yeah, it's just like if you don't know their name, they're matey.
Interesting. That's like my dude, where it's like, dude up the road said that. Like, yeah, dude said this.
That guy, that person.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the only one I can think of.
Interesting. I mean, there is commonality between where you are and where I am in that we both live in like seaside towns. Yeah. We learned that last time we chatted. So maybe that's the thing. Maybe we live in a seaside town and you have a name for like that guy, matey or dude.
Oh, man. I think you use the south, or you use the coast much more than I do. I literally live like 10 minutes away from a beach, maybe less. And I don't use it at all. I don't go surfing. I don't go to the beach. It's dreadful. I should.
Is that like,
I don't know if you do.
Do people in your area, like, okay, so I apologize if I'm stereotyping a little bit, but like my image of the beaches in the UK are like cold. So like, it's not, you don't enjoy it in the same way that we enjoy it here in California.
That's very true. It's usually raining as well.
Right. So like, are there people in your town who do like water-y things, and if so, what do they do, like what sports or what activities and stuff?
It's always surfing. Like, it's probably one of the biggest things in the UK down here is surfing is the main one.
We've
got like, I live close to a beach, but there's, when I say a beach, I mean there's probably about five beaches within a 15-minute radius. Like,
wow.
So there's a big surf community around it and all that sort of thing. A few mates that live over the road from me love it, and they go very often. But it literally, like, it almost closes for the winter because it's so cold here. So it'll just, like, they'll be like, oh, we've got winter suits on until October, and then we'll just stop until May or something.
Oh, my. Because I bet the wetsuits are, like, so thick. I watched this surf documentary once where, like, this guy, I think he was just trying to like surf at the most amount of beaches as possible within a short period of time. So he just like
Oh my
bought a
God.
van. Like I think he started in Scotland and then he decided to make his way down Europe or something like that. And like it looks so cold and he had like a thick wetsuit with the hood and everything. And I
Yeah.
was just like, oh my, like I feel like my heart would stop getting into
You
that
see a lot of
water.
people here that have got the hood, the gloves, the boots,
Yeah,
the full
everything.
shebang.
Like, yeah, I bet you. I mean, I feel cold in my water and I'm just wearing like a regular wetsuit. And I've started to think about like maybe I should get booties, but like I can't even imagine the waters up
Oh,
there.
goodness.
Like San Francisco when I lived there, I was like, there's no way I'm going swimming in San Francisco. And the UK is even further north than that. I probably
Oh,
sound really
yeah.
ignorant right now, and I'm sorry,
No, it's good we're
but
learning.
we're learning about our different parts of the world because we are like hundreds of thousands of miles away. But
Yeah.
yeah, okay, cool. This it's very interesting to talk to someone from a different part of the world always. So, I wanted okay. So I guess like backstory, the way that
Sure.
I met Tom, I guess, and the way that we know each other is I found I'm also really into desk setup, as you all know from my YouTube channel, and so I get a lot of like desk setup related content recommended to me on YouTube and Instagram. I found this Instagram post with this really cool digital background, like wallpaper, and it was tagged with Byte Review. And I was like, what is this wallpaper? I need it right now. And so then I found Tom through that, because he sells his digital wallpapers through his store, Kiroku. And then I started following you on like YouTube and Instagram and stuff. And then you were just like, oh, hey. And then I was just like, oh my gosh.
He
Like,
speaks.
are we gonna be friends? Because genuinely, your content and like your desk setups are so beautiful. Like, there's like, I wish I had found your stuff so much earlier because, the way that I try to do my desk setup is very, and we've talked about this, not RGB, like, very
Sure.
like organic, like comforting light, like bright natural light, and like surrounding yourself with like things that you love, sort of things. Like, it's just not the gamer setup.
No,
And Tom's is like the opposite.
that look is just horrible. Well, yeah, like thank you so much for the kind words. It does mean a lot, especially coming from yourself. But
Oh.
yeah, one of the I guess yeah, like you said, I absolutely hate the that kind of gamer aesthetic where it's all like RGB and like it looks like you're in some sort of cyberpunk neon like
Yeah.
neon wonderland. Like
Yeah.
I can get, I can see, I can kind of see why people like it, but the second you show me a gaming chair, like I want to throw up. It's like horrible. But like yeah, so basically when I've been like making my setups and stuff, I always thought quite hard about what do I actually want, because it's so easy to like look at some posts and be like I'm just going to copy that because that I think
Right.
is the right look, and you don't actually like really think about what you want. So like I just wanted the opposite of a gamer aesthetic. So I just wanted it to be like super clean but also full of color and vibrancy and like you know a couple plants, and just make it like really make it my own. Because it's even when you like avoid the gamer stuff, it's really easy to go down that kind of clinical look where it's almost like just gray, white,
Totally.
black, which I
Yeah.
like that look. I really do like that look. And when I see it, I'm like, oh yeah, it's great. But it's not personal. And that's kind of like one of the things I really pushed. I was like, oh, I like all this like Japanese inspired stuff, and I really like Nintendo, and I really like clean pine wood and all that sort of stuff. And I'm gonna put in all the colors I like because why not? So that's
Yeah.
kind of like where it all came from.
Yeah, and I told you this last time, but one of my favorite things about your videos is that you always have a Ghibli movie playing on the background. So it's just like it's not only like your desk setup, but it also really comes alive in your content too, and like creating that very like this is Tom. He's really interested in all these things. Also, I relate to a lot of it, and like just I don't know. I was looking at your YouTube channel the other day, and I was just like, these thumbnails are just so pretty, and I want to click on all of them and watch all because I know all of them are going to be so good. So I don't know how much of an overlap we have between our audiences, but like just to kind of like intro you a little bit further, can you tell everybody like how did you like get into making YouTube content and like how you got started, all of that kind of stuff?
Yeah, sure. So, it's a really long story, so I'm gonna really crush it down. Basically, I was a tutor at a local college, which is someone that helps like students apply to go to university through UCAS, which is what we have in the UK. And that was probably the most stressful job I had in my life. I had like 300 students; they all had to apply, and students have wide range of issues. Some of them are lovely and some of them are really tricky to work with, and some of them have problems that you just can't comprehend. So I handed my notice halfway through that year, and then at the end of the year I just pulled out because I didn't want to do it anymore. But I didn't want to be that kind of teacher that leaves like midway, like, oh, we had this guy and then we had that person. And so I was like, I'll stick it out just for that year, just so they have at least some sort of consistent experience. So I left, and then the same college had an opening for a media technician, which is like help the students, give them cameras, all that sort of stuff. And I hadn't touched a camera at this point. I was 25 and I've not touched, not been anywhere near it. I thought I'll apply for it, and then it was part-time and I can just find something else. Anyway, ended up really loving it, picked up my own camera, and then because I've been watching like the golden oldies of YouTube, so like MKBHD and all the originals, I was like, oh, if I'm gonna learn to use this camera and show the students, I at least need to do it. So I just started making videos about phones and all that sort of stuff. And then while I was doing that, the teachers noticed that I was quite good at editing video and using Photoshop mainly, and they're like, hey, teach the students a little bit each week if you like, 2 hours a week I think it started at. And then the next year they're like, do you want to do it 7 hours a week, because there's a bit more money as well, which obviously was good. And I ended up going a full-time media teacher, which was cool, for a couple of years. And I was still doing YouTube, and all this time I was doing YouTube in my lunch breaks. I lived really close, so I could run back home, film for like, this is how like mad it was at the time, I'd run home and film for like half an hour and come back to college.
Wow.
and teach for the rest of the time. Which is good, because it shows I really enjoyed it, obviously. But it was, it was a lot. And then I was making I'm not going to say loads from YouTube, because it was low amount, but it was enough to drop like a day maybe. So I said, like, I want to go part time if that's okay, because I kind of want to follow this. So they ended up just pushing all my teaching hours into 3 days rather than five. So I just got really like overworked and stuff. And then COVID hit, and I was like, I ain't doing this anymore. It's like absolutely crazy. I got another job with a marketing company as a freelancer, which I still work for them a little bit at the moment, for 2 days a week. And then I just decided I'm going to give YouTube a go for 3 days a week. And then here I am.
There you go. Love that background. That's really cool. It's awesome that you started in teaching, and then now, because I think they're like, no matter what kind of YouTube content you're creating, you are still teaching in some way. Like literally, even if it's just telling a story. Yeah, definitely. And so that's awesome that like you have that background and you've been able to kind of like use those skills. I've actually seen some of your like photography and videography content too, which is like so good. I was like looking at your website yesterday, and I was just like, how the heck did he like this? Like, I don't. You're so talented in all these different ways, and I'm like, I admire your work so much. I think like, okay, so kind of going back to sort of like gadgets and stuff, right? Because like, I talk about it sometimes on my channel, but it's not really main. I mean, it is kind of one of the main focuses now that I'm getting really into it, like learning about all these different keyboards and monitors and stuff like that. But
the rabbit hole.
The rabbit hole, literally. Like, you can go so deep, right? So like, when you're like, testing out content, or you're testing out gadgets, you're creating content, like, how do you decide like what's like the best gadget, right? Especially because my audience is in technology, and it's just like, well, you need X, Y, and Z to have like the perfect setup to do programming, to do video editing, to do whatever, right? And like, there's just so many options out there. So like, how do you mentally like think about all of that in terms of like just all the options out there, like what's the best for you?
And like, it's also so tempting, right? Because you see all these nice things on YouTube and you're like, oh, I could probably use that. And then you don't buy it. And I've fallen into that trap like many times. But I guess you kind of fall into like two camps. And the first camp is one I always try and stick to, is like, what do you actually need? Like, so this is one of the reasons why I've kind of like the last year in my YouTube channel, I've just like veered to Apple products, like pretty much iPhone and Mac and all that sort of stuff. I just like finally made the big switch from my PC to the Mac Studio, and that's been a long process, because it just makes my life easier. And this is one of the reasons I stopped looking at Android phones, is because every time I switched to it, everything around that would become a lot harder. So like, my immediate family use an iPhone, or my friends use an iPhone, like, my girlfriend uses an iPhone, so it's so easy for us to just communicate. And at the end of the day, that's what the phone is for communicating. So right. as soon as like there's a barrier, even if it is quite small, like in the UK, we use WhatsApp like pretty much 90% of the time. But for those like 5% of the times when I can't get in contact, or like Callie would text me and be like, why aren't you picking up FaceTime? It's like, I don't have it right now. It's just those little things. So the perfect gadget really is the one that kind of really fits your lifestyle. But then you've also got to ignore everyone else saying like, oh, you know, they're rubbish. Why would you go with that? It's like, I don't care. Like, that's the one that right. works for me. But I also yeah. think there's a second camp, because there is a second camp, and I've been there. I've jumped in and out of it. And I recently, hopefully you think I jumped out of it, is that kind of like, I think they call it GAS, or like gear acquisition syndrome, where you like constantly thinking, like, well, what can I get next? What can I get next? And like, I had that with cameras. Like, I bought a Fuji camera and I really loved it. And I had this like, you know, vision of me using it when we go traveling and like taking all these amazing shots of this amazing Fuji camera. And I realized at the end of the day, I'd just fallen into this trap of like really wanting it because I want the thing, but not actually like what it produces. And then when I got it, I was a bit like, oh, do you know what? Actually, your autofocus isn't quite where I wanted it. And then I just kept going back to my Sony, and I was like, this wasn't right for me. So yeah, I think those are the two things. So yeah, if trying to pick the perfect gadget is trying, as hard as it is, try and zone out everybody else and just think, what do you actually want? Like, what's going to be useful?
Yeah, that's if you know what those things are, then you go into like gadget review videos on YouTube, because oftentimes like the first step is to go there, which is great because then you're informed and stuff like that. But it can be kind of like decision paralysis too. But I love that it's just like, at the end of the day, like technology, in my opinion, technology is supposed to help your lifestyle. It's supposed to help you do things. And if it's getting in the way, then it probably means it's not, like, there's something else better out there, and then gives you a reason to like go and do those things. Like, I remember one of the biggest blockers for me when I was starting YouTube was like, I thought I had to have this $1,000 camera kind of thing. And then someone was like, oh, you can just film on your iPad or your iPhone, because iPhone cameras were pretty good by then. And I was just like, oh, okay. And then that unlocked me to do it. But then, you know, after you use it for a while, like, you start noticing there's these certain things that get in the way with iPhone, where it's just like, okay, well, I can't offload it to a memory card. There's only certain limitations with like the quality, and like, you can't, you know, toggle the aperture as easily and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And then it gives you a reason to like go and get the other thing.
You've kind of got to upgrade with like how your skill set upgrades. Like, and I always used to tell that to students, like, you don't need, your first video should be shot on your phone, or should be shot on the college camera, because, you know, you can't, if I gave you my Sony, you'd still produce, you know, not a great thing. It would, you know, it would just feel like you've not done it quite as well. But like, that's it. That's why, you know, I stuck with my Sony, like my first Sony camera, for like 3.5 years. I didn't upgrade it because I was like, I don't think I need to. And then when it got to that point where it's like, do you know what, it keeps overheating, and it keeps like filling up the memory card too, like, slowly, and, you know, I have to buy these other memory cards, and then I can't buy this lens for it, I can't buy that lens for it, and then suddenly it's like, okay, well, now it's worth the upgrade.
I feel like whenever it's hard to give blanket advice too, I think, as like creators sometimes, to just be like, this is the one that you need, because it is so case by case. And especially on YouTube, when it's just like, people are just going to watch your video no matter what challenge they're encountering, kind of thing. But that's also what I like. I really like the way that you framed a lot of your videos, where you're talking about like, here are the use cases in which this gadget could be useful to you. Or here are the ways that I use it, as a way to kind of just like really like make it more human oriented. And just really, because like at the end of the day, these gadgets are not like what we're revolving around in our day-to-day lives. They help us do these things. And if like, it's kind of like, it's silly kind of sometimes to think about, where it's just like, we've had gadgets around for like decades-ish at this point now. And it feels silly to be told like that we don't really know how to use them. But in reality, like, we kind of don't. Like, sometimes we need that pointer of just like, here's this way that you've never thought about before, and how you can use this gadget that maybe you have or you don't have.
I was just gonna say that those are like a
really interesting way to like tell the story of gadgets that I usually don't typically see in the gadget space.
Definitely. And like, that's one of my favorite kind of videos to make, is like, I think one of the like more popular videos on my channel is like how to get the most out of your iPad. And it's like, here's actually like 7 ways you probably haven't really thought about using it, which it's really, really good for. And like making those videos are like usually the funnest, because I'll do a bit of research beforehand as well, just see if there's anything that I've missed. And then sometimes I've totally missed one and I'm like, oh my God, that's incredible. I've got to use it. Like there's this really simple one. It's like a 3 pinch to like copy and paste. But you can
I
do
didn't
that.
Know about that recently.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And you can do that across. So if you like grab something from your iPad, you can actually go to straight to your iPhone and just pinch back out and it will just paste it. And it's just like, what? Why don't they talk about that sort of thing?
Totally. It's like buried deep in like one of those sessions at like an Apple Talk kind of thing that like most consumers are not going to go to. And so it is kind of up to like content creators to kind of like pull those things out and just be like, look at what you can do with it. But it's absolutely. Like, and then even then, like when Apple or some companies are talking about it, they talk about like, oh, you can do this. But like until we actually apply it to our lives, it can kind of just be like, yeah, like so? Like what's the point kind of thing,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah, definitely.
I like the kind of like how-to guides.
Definitely. Well, I think one of the biggest things like I kind of not struggle with, but one of the things I've started mentioning a lot in my videos now is like as a content creator, and I'm sure you probably have this as well, is like I don't live in like the general experience anymore. I'm almost like I've come out of it because I test every single iPad, because it's kind of like my job now. Everyone's like, oh, why have you upgraded? It's like, I haven't. Like, I wouldn't. If I wasn't doing this, I wouldn't. I would probably still be using my iPad Pro from 2018, because there's nothing wrong with that and it still works fine. But like, and then I think sometimes when they see it, they're like, oh, he's upgraded, so I should think about upgrading. It's like, no, it's never that. Like, try and say, if I wasn't doing what I'm doing, I'd be on my iPad Pro from 2018 and I'd probably have like an iPhone 11 or something from a couple of years back and I'd be really happy with it.
Have you made a video like that before? I'm just like, if I didn't, here's like what I would use if I didn't have to upgrade all the time.
I haven't, but I've literally started putting it towards the end of the next couple of videos. I've said like, I always try and put myself in a consumer frame of mind. Like, what would I actually buy? I think I said my iPad Air review, like if I didn't have an iPad right now, that's what I would go for because it makes the most sense. But it's so tricky because it's like, well, I've got the 12.9 iPad Pro right there. I've got the mini there and I've got the one over there. So my choice is ridiculous. It's almost stupid.
Yeah.
It's an unreal choice.
I think it's just like, it becomes FOMO, right? Where like, sure. I have this iPad and then I'm just like, I have yet to even make an iPad video because I feel like it's taken about this long to like really be able to talk about it. Because I've been needing to figure out how to include it into my lifestyle, like naturally, I guess. And then sometimes I see reviews and I'm like, maybe I should buy the new iPad. And then it's
no,
literally
don't.
Nothing but FOMO.
Yeah, it is. Like, yeah. And like trying to force something into your workflow, if it doesn't work after like a few days, then like dropping it is fine. Like if it doesn't fit, it doesn't fit. And like, I honestly was like that with iPads for the longest time. Like, I was like, these don't work for me. Like, I don't know why I'd need one. But it just slowly, it kind of slowly crept up on me. And it's like, leave the house without it.
Right. When you realize that something's like not working for you, like, do you like sell it back? Or like, do you, like how, like, because that's one of the things that I'm like, for some people, it's really easy to get into that mindset of like, oh, I can try a gadget and then just like sell it back. And then for me, I'm always just like, but if I try it, then I feel like I've used it. And so I can't give it back, or like I'm just stuck with it. Like it feels like every decision that I make in gadgets, desk setup is like permanent sometimes.
Yeah. It's like,
and
I
so
can't
then you
change.
Get it. Yeah. And then I think that's exactly what causes decision paralysis, because you're just like, I have to live with this forever, which is totally not true.
No, yeah, I know exactly what you mean. Like, I think I had that when I picked up the new MacBook Pro 14-inch, which I had in like December and January, and I like bought it and I was like so excited to use it and all that sort of thing. And then when I started using it, I realized, you know what, this one's not the right one for me. And I had that weird guilt. I was like, well, I can't return it because I've used it for like a week or like 2 weeks, at the time. And then I was talking to my friend. He's like, just return it, mate. Like, they won't care. Like, that's what returns are for. Like, in the UK at least, they're very, like, I don't know. I think the EU. Oh, no, we're not part of the EU. So that's how easy it is to forget. The law for it is very good. Like, you can pretty much return it for like a year on Amazon. It's something ridiculous. Wow. So I was like, I'm sure Jeff Bezos isn't going to mind. So I literally just returned it. But I know what you mean. Like, when I was reviewing phones a while ago, I would buy them and hold on to them and then sell them, and I would lose so much money. In those first few years on YouTube, I was like net loss every year, all the time. Because I'd buy like a Samsung phone for like £700. And then they don't hold their value. Right. So I'd sell it for like 250, like 4 months later. I'd be like, what am I doing to myself?
It was awful. Yeah. Well, like, kind of pivoting to desk setups a little bit, because I do want to talk about that, because they're all related in the end of, at the end of the day. But I know that my audience loves talking about desk setups. But like, in your perspective, like, what do you think is the key to building an awesome desk setup? We talked about, a little bit about, like, you know, to you, it's really important to like bring the individuality and figure out what you like and stuff like that. But for anybody who's like, let's say they're like starting from scratch, they have some sort of budget to like build a desk setup. Like, what do you think are the things that they should think about? I don't know if it's, you have gadget recommendations or just like mentalities and perspectives.
My biggest one, and everyone's probably going to roll their eyes at this, but it does make the biggest difference, is to just tidy up. Like, actually have like a proper tidy of your space, and like and really like set out where you want it to go. Like, grab a piece of paper and sketch out the room and just have a genuine think. Like, what do you want to see when you walk in there? Like, what's the first thing you want to see? Do you want to see a bunch of art on the wall? Do you want to see like a nice pegboard like the one I've got behind me? Do you want to see like, you know, your computer sitting there ready to go, sort of thing? So have a think about that. But the I think the main thing is don't just look at like stuff that you can just get off the shelf. Like, a lot of the best desk setups are like, the one, I'm not saying mine's the best, by the way, but like one from IKEA, you know, you can build it out of certain parts. Like, my one's like a kitchen tabletop sitting on a drawer that's sitting on a trestle. So it's not like, people ask like, where'd you get your desk from? It's like, well, it's made from bits from IKEA. But yeah, I think try not to fall into a trap of like making it like the gray, white and black sort of aesthetic, but I think the best desk setups, I think, are the ones that have so much personality. It's like, wow, what does this person do? How do they make their money? And it's like, you go in there and you get such a sense of who they are, because they've got like such cool stuff on the wall, or like they've got maybe a Switch rather than like a PS5, or like a RGB gaming setup, or they've got like a bunch of art books, you know, things that mean a lot. I think Matthew and Cena's setups are incredible. I think he's so good. Yeah, they're stunning. Yeah. He's got it like on lock. He knows exactly what he's going for. And whenever I see his like updates, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, let me watch it immediately.
Totally. And he's like, I love that he's so like bold in his designs too, where it's like, it's not just like, let me make this small upgrade. He's like, I'm going to install this custom cabinetry on this side of the wall because that's what I want.
I love that video. Like,
and I'm like, that I'd never do so it. So good, yeah. I would never do it either. Yeah. But I'm like, the kind of courage and the boldness that you have to know it's what awesome. You want and to do it is like incredible. Because, like, I think the way that I've started thinking about desk setups is like, it is kind of like the cross between like a really like a pragmatic, like very useful, like workstation with interior design. Like, at the end of the day, it's a form of self-expression. It's like it, but it also has to be useful. Like, you have to find a chair that you can sit comfortably on, but it also can look nice. You can have a color palette, you can have artwork, you can have whatever beefy like gadgets and setups and stuff like that. It has to work. And like, I think I originally started off like desk setups where I was just like, it just has to work. Like, it has to be MVP. Like I just need it to be functional, I guess.
Yeah.
But then as soon as you get over the functional part and you're just like, okay, actually, in reality, the thing that you need to make a desk setup functional is a computer, a desk, and a chair, probably.
Yeah.
And then, you know, as your needs grow, you can get more things. But then, like, if you can then get past that and just like, okay, let's not make it just functional, but let's also make it beautiful, is when, like, things get really cool.
Absolutely. I think it's like, it's really good to like, if you've got like a guilty pleasure or something, like, it's, I don't know, maybe it's anime, or maybe it's like a really specific video game, is like, inject that into the setup, but just very kind of like always think not over the top. So maybe you just have like, I've just got one amiibo on show. I've got a lot of amiibo. I don't want to admit how many I've got. It's embarrassing. But I only ever show one because it's like, well, the interest is clearly there, but I'm not like, and here's my setup of every character from Animal Crossing. It's like, no one needs to see that. But they might need to see like Tom Nook sitting on the side, and that's enough.
Right. Definitely. Yeah, because someone can look at him, you should be like, oh, he plays Animal Crossing. And that's all the signal that you need.
That's all you need. You almost like don't need to mention it. It's like, you know, sometimes when I'm talking about like the Link one that I use a lot, I'll just slide it into frame and I won't say anything. Uh-huh. It's just there. Yeah. So it's like, oh, they kind of get it. Also, like, I think it's okay to not like some setups. Like some people think, I think they think like the RGB thing is like the go-to, or like the super clinical stuff is the go-to. It's fine to stand back and go like, because I like some of, not the RGB stuff, but I like some of those things. But it's like, I wouldn't do that. But I really, really appreciate it. And it's okay to do that. Just take little bits from those things. So maybe you like the cleanness of it. So I'm going to wipe down my desk every day or something, you know, something like that.
Right. Totally. For me, it's neon signs where I'm just like, I love the look that it brings to a room. And I really appreciate it. And there's some really cool artwork and like colors and stuff. But I would likely never put it in my room. Yeah. But like the thing that I like about it is the way that it lights up a room.
They're so beautiful when they're done right.
They're so pretty. Yeah.
Yeah.
But it, like, I can appreciate it, but I'm like, and literally I've come so close sometimes where I was like, maybe I shouldn't get a neon sign.
I think Sarah Dietschy has got like a peach one and it's so cool. And when I saw that, I was just like, oh my God, like I need one. But then I keep thinking, I must have fallen into the same trap, because I was like, the thing is, when you turn that on, neon signs are bright. Like that's going to go like over everything you do. Totally. So it's, you've got to be okay with the look, for sure. Yeah.
So I guess like if you were to kind of like make like a you know, a three-step plan for like making a desk setup, like would you start with like a sketch of your desk area first to figure out like what you want it to look like?
Definitely. I've always sketched out like before what I want. So Matthew Encino again is like a really good example, but his are like CAD drawings and stuff. But honestly, just grab a bit of paper or whatever you've got and just like really roughly sketch out the room. And just like, that's the first step, is I'd draw kind of what I want. Then I guess step two is I'd try and get the main pieces. So try and get the desk and try and, you know, you don't need the best thing straight off the bat. I think IKEA, you can build an IKEA desk setup for like, I honestly think about £40 to £50, because you can buy like pretty cheap legs, and you can buy the classic white tabletops like £11, which is like, I don't know, $16 or something, which is cheap, you know, it is quite cheap. So you can get there. And, you know, talking of cheap things, like putting art on the wall is probably one of the cheapest things you can do, especially if you print it locally. And it makes such a massive difference. And then step three is, I would say, sorry, I'm jumping on the steps. I heard you mention it. And step three is just to iterate as you go. Like it's not, I don't ever consider my desk setup done. It's never done. There's always things I'm adding. Like I've had a desk shelf on here for a while. I'm considering taking that away at the moment and maybe putting something else there. So it's like that constant iteration. But now we're all working from home and stuff. It's like, I want to sit in a place that I really love. Like I don't want to sit in like a horrible, like I see a lot of people working from home are sitting at the kitchen table, and if that's what you've got, then that's fine. But I'm like, no, I want to sit somewhere awesome all day.
Yeah, totally. And if it is the kitchen table, then like spruce up a kitchen table or something like that. Right. There's so many. I think there's a way to work with everything, like right, like no matter what space, big or small. I'm actually really inspired by like the small space interior designers, because it's just they're so clever with storage and the way they decorate and stuff like that. But like there are going to be limitations, and that's totally fine. But it's like, I think what's awesome is when you can work with those limitations and then still create something that's functional and beautiful.
Yeah,
that I feel like in and of itself is like always worth doing. It's a fun challenge. You're problem solving your way through it, and then at the end you can enjoy it. Like you get to sit there every day and like, like really take in everything that you want and keep changing things as you go.
Definitely. Leaning into, like, I used to say this to students a lot, like, oh, I can't do this because of that. It's like, well, really lean into the fact that you can't do that or can do that. If you've got a really small room, then lean into the fact that it's a small room and look at like things that you can potentially fold up and move around and put stuff on the, like you can hang your chair on the wall maybe, or maybe you've got loads of hooks so you can do things like that. Like always lean into things that aren't perfect, and then that also makes it more personal again and again. It's great.
Totally. I really like this channel called Never Too Small on YouTube.
Yeah, I was about to mention them.
Dude.
when it comes up, I like click instantly.
Same. So for those of you who don't watch, Never Too Small is a YouTube channel that highlights small interiors, and they do it all around the world, like in Italy and Spain, in like South Africa, in the UK, in the United States, and like a lot of the time they're like renovating like a 300 square foot like condo or something like that, and an interior designer, and like they all they really show is like the end product and how they did things, and they usually interview the architect. But it's so fascinating because it's like 200-300 square feet is not that big, but like they were able to fit a kitchen, a bathroom, a bed, a living space, and a dining space in there usually, and sometimes a workspace.
Oh,
it's
so,
so
cool.
Fascinating. Yeah,
I love it.
So cool.
I love it. I think there was one recently where some couple bought a place in Hong Kong, right in the middle, like a flat thing, right in the middle of loads of others, and it hadn't been changed since the 60s or something. And they pulled it out, and it had all these like sliding doors to move from room to room. I was just like, this is incredible.
So cool. Yeah, I think they're definitely leaning into the constraints, and like that's where like really cool new innovative ideas can come from.
Massively.
So you just gotta work with what you got.
That's the one.
Yeah, definitely. So we're gonna wrap up here, but I wanted to ask you one more thing. We've talked a lot about, you know, we've had a lot of takeaways already in the show, which I love. It's awesome.
Good.
I learned a lot, and
I've learned a lot.
Absolutely gonna be helpful. Good. I guess like I'm just curious, Tom, what are your like kind of favorite tools, accessories, like things that you've been using on a daily basis? Like just kind of give us your fave things, like your favorites right now, because I'm just curious.
I almost feel like I need to mention the iPad, because there you go, the iPad. Do you know, I think I mentioned this in my latest video, but the I've been really like way too harsh on like the keyboard. The keyboard's really good. Like I hated it for a long time. But I'm just coming around to the keyboard. I like the keyboard now.
I've heard that a lot recently of like, I feel like when it first came out, everyone's like, but then these days everyone's like, yo, it's actually really good.
Yeah. It's almost like a no brainer. In far as other tools, I'm gonna mention this because I think you'd appreciate it too, but the NuFi.
Oh, nice.
This has been great. I've actually really liked this. The only thing that sucks about it is the battery life, which I think we talked about briefly. It's like I turned off, it's got like a white backlight, which is awesome, but it runs it out in like a day if you don't go on, which is really bad. So I've turned the light off on it now, and it lasts about 2 days. But I like not having a wire on it, so it's like I'll take that.
It's a mechanical keyboard, right?
Yeah, it's like really low profile. I know if you're going to ask me any specs, I'm going to be really disappointing and say I'm not too sure. But it's really, I don't know if this is any.
Oh, it's really thin.
If you're listening, it's very thin. it's like feels kind of, I guess it feels most like an Apple sort of keyboard. It's got that kind of slim feel to it. Because I've got way too many, as I'm sure you do, keyboards kicking around. And some of them are massive. They're so chunky. So probably those two. There is one more, and it's I bought a Fjallraven bag, which I love, but this is the game changer. I bought the camera insert for it, and it's
insert.
Yeah, and it like fills the whole thing, so it's like really massive. And no joke, it's been better than my dedicated camera bag.
Like
silly. So that probably recently has been my favorite thing. I went on a few shoots last week, and I took it with me. I kind of took that plunge. I was like, I'm not taking my camera bag. I'm going to take my Fjallraven with the camera insert. And it was so much better. I was like, how have they got this right?
Do you have one of the ones, like Fjallraven's all open from the top, right? Like they don't have the side pocket that a lot of camera bags do.
I tend to find on my shoots, like I never do this kind of reach thing and grab from the side. Like I'm usually like set up for the day. So pulling it open and stuff is fine. But it doesn't have any of that. It's very much a like Fjallraven bag, just with that insert. The insert's so cool.
Nice. I mean, pale ramen bags come in much more colors, and they're a lot cuter than most like camera bags. And
I love them. They're awesome.
I have the Peak Designs one, which I love. Like, it's so versatile, and you can use it for so many things. It's just so heavy because it's like got all of the knobs and all of that stuff. And I'm just like, I wish I could have something that's a little bit lower profile, still a backpack. Because I also have their like the Peak Design sling, which I also like using. But like, I'm just like not a big person who can hold like one of those like
The
10
whole
gallon
lot.
backpacks.
Yeah, I honestly know how you feel, because like one of the older camera bags I had was like a big chunky boy, and I was like putting it on. I was like, this is huge. It looks ridiculous on me, and like I'm not like small. Like, but the no the yeah, Fowler Oven stuff has been it's great. I said I was going to say I really like the Peak Design stuff, but it's really hard to see it in person in the UK. Like, they're just not
Oh,
anywhere.
interesting.
So like
Oh, wow.
I'm so particular about certain things, especially
Yeah.
backpacks. So if I don't see it
Yeah.
in person, I'm like,
That's fair. Yeah, you just don't know until you like touch the quality and you see how everything works. I will say, the Peak Designs, everyone that I've talked to has said it's super worth it. The stitching is really good. Also, they have a refurbished store, which is where I
Oh,
bought
do they?
mine. Yeah, so I
Oh,
bought my
nice.
sling through that because I was just like, they don't do sales, but I don't really know if I want to pay full price on this. And they don't really sell a lot through like merchants or like the color that I wanted. They didn't. I have the gray for both, but they have
Sure.
a refurbished store, which is really just an eBay store that they do. And so I got it for a little bit off, and I was like, okay, that makes the purchasing decision a little bit
That'll
easier.
do.
And then we brought it on trips. It's waterproof. It's like, I don't know. If you have the opportunity to try it and see
They
it
do
somewhere,
look
like.
great. I must admit, like, as far as like looking at something online goes, because I've watched loads of videos about it and all that sort of stuff. Every time I've seen it, I'm like, they do look cool. They do look great. I just need to see it.
Right, right, right. Totally.
I've got the camera strap and the cuff,
Yeah.
because I know it's going to be great for that, but
Right,
never
right.
taken the full plunge.
Yeah. Well, let me know if you ever get a chance,
I
'cause
will.
I'd be curious to hear what you think. Well, thank you so much, Sean, for being on the show today. Where can people find you on the internet?
Thanks for having me. I've had a blast. But the find me at Byte Review everywhere. So that's BYTE and then review on Twitter and Instagram and on YouTube.
Yeah, I will link all of those links in the show notes, in the description box down below. So thank you so much, Tom, for being here. This is really fun.
Thanks
I
for
feel like
having me.
every
It's
time we
been
talk, we're
great.
just like we could dive into everything and
Yay.
anything.
Absolutely. It's been great.
Awesome.
Thanks so much for having me on. I really liked it.
Awesome.
Make sure to watch the video recording of this episode and others on my YouTube channel at youtube.com/hellomayuko.